available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football, maybe Pac-12 scandals, Pac-12 schedule. We took a week off.
Any other SC words? Cool. I see what you're doing here. Oh, they're all incepting.
I'm incepting. We took last week off, or I did. I was in Hawaii.
Yeah, I didn't take last week off. I was here. I actually showed up.
Did you?
Yeah, I just didn't know how to operate any of this.
That'd be so funny if, like, I let you in, like, hey, you have to start a broadcast. Like, you're like, yeah. Like, you'd start, like, a fire in the corner or something.
How do you open the door?
Yeah, I was in Hawaii for the Polynesian Bowl, and it was great. I got to catch up with Greg Biggins, Brandon Huffman, Blair Angulo. So it was fun to see those guys. I tried to get David to come out with me and check out some of those Pac-12 prospects, but he wouldn't do it.
No.
So, but it's Hawaii, man.
It is. It is Hawaii, man.
Have you been a bunch to Hawaii or not really?
I've been zero times to Hawaii.
You've never been to Hawaii?
Zero times.
Wow.
Okay. Zero.
That's a little surprising, being a West Coast guy, you know?
Yeah, I've been...
Who loves the beach?
I've been basically... I think I've been to 40-plus states, but I haven't done Alaska and I haven't done Hawaii.
I have not done Alaska. I would love to do Alaska. Hey, the comments are working. That's great.
That's tremendous. That's
Alex says smash the like button. I love that.
Smash it.
Cameron is fired up, boys. And Mark just says hello to Ryan and David. But yeah, we want that like button smashed for sure. And if you want to follow us on the Twitters, you can do it at Pac-12 Podcast. And if you want to send us a question, we got a bunch of email questions this week. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is where you can reach us there. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. Did it sound like I said Texas or text us? I don't know.
I heard text us.
Okay, good.
But I should be clear, I rarely am listening.
You definitely do not. Like, right. I'm going to slip something in about you going to jail or something, and
I'll be like, oh, yeah, okay. Well, because I got to think about what I'm going to say next, you know?
True.
That's how normal conversations go. You don't actually listen to the other person. You just think about what you're going to say next.
I don't think that's how they work.
Is that not right?
No.
Is that actually antisocial behavior?
We're going to go to communication school.
Is that a sign of some sort of mental illness, actually?
Yes. But yeah, we have one text, I think, and one voicemail from your buddy Perk. It might have to do with some dead presidents. I'm not going to guarantee anything. But yeah, and the website, Pac-12podcast.com, go over there. You can go over to Reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions to chat with other POC listeners. But most importantly, as you guys know, you got to go to the Apple Podcasting app. You got an Android? Throw it away. Go buy an iPhone, go to the Apple Podcasting app, find the Podcast of Champions, leave us a 5-star rating and some sort of review that could be positive, negative. As long as we get the 5 stars, that's all we care about. Trash us. Say we're ugly. Say they're terrible. We're stupid. We sound dumb. All those things are true. Go ahead and do that. But just leave us 5 stars and we will love you forever and read what you have to say.
We have two more ones.
Nice.
Two more ones? Two new ones. Not more ones. More ones doesn't sound good. Mm. More ones is actually very close to morons.
That's true.
Which fits. This is from Free Willy. It's a 5-star review.
Okay.
An analysis for the everyman. A not too serious review of the Conference of Champions. That reads like it should be like our tagline. All right. This is from a 5-star review from You Know Who, Mister. A Trojan and Bruin churn out mediocre, quote, content for a conference they're about to abandon. I liked these guys a lot more before they became complete corporate shills from MyBookie, 247 Sports, Jockey Underwear, Disney, whatever they need to pay the bills, but some of their current sponsorships are getting weird. I don't need a 20-minute infomercial for Build-A-Bear in the middle of the pod. And now David's penchant for soccer is bordering on obsession. This is a football podcast, not a football podcast. Ryan is too much of a pushover to cut him off, but devoting such an inordinate amount of time to the Premier League is just getting old. We get it. You're an Arsenal fan. Honestly, the only reason I haven't hit the unsubscribe button is because this is literally the only way I can get any news on the Pac-12, soon to be Pac-10, as literally no one else covers this dreck of a conference. I like that. It was making things up. It had lies in it.
Yes, and we still read it.
And it was perfect. I loved it. Every bit. 5-star review. I give that 5-star review a 5-star review.
I do love it. It's a very good 5-star review.
It is.
We appreciate it. Thanks for those. Those are still fun. Somehow we were blessed with beautifully intelligent and snarky listeners. Maybe they like some of the snark you get on the show. And they write really funny things. We have some, I would put our reviews up against anybody's, just the kind of inside jokes. And
we should have a review off with various other podcasts.
Yeah, like our reviews are going to blow yours away.
Yeah, no, our review zone.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's like three guys writing them all.
We have undeservedly, we don't deserve it, but we have some great listeners. That's awesome.
Tremendous.
I mean, how many Shanes are there in the world?
I don't know. I mean, and how many of those are Shane? That's the real question.
Pretty impressive, yeah. Yeah. I did.
What if you made an entire listenership out of one guy, Shane, and he wrote all the reviews?
A couple years ago, there was this USC, alumni, whatever, fan, and he's like kind of a stand-up comedian, restaurateur kind of guy, and he would call in with several different voices and leave voicemails for our podcast, like all kinds of stuff. It was pretty funny. He might have done it for our show here, too. He might have done that. He was like Jake from Snake Lake, all these weird, he would call in like with different accents and stuff. It was kind of funny. So that was a legit like one person leaving a whole bunch of different things. But I think we have other listeners. It's not just one. It's not just Shane.
No. We looked at the numbers. There were at least 11 people that listened to the last show, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
No. Our numbers are actually pretty good. I like it. And we're doing simulcasting live on our YouTube channel. We're getting close we're getting up. I know. 800 subscribers over there. We got to get to 1,000. So push it through.
Subscribe now.
Please subscribe.
Do it.
Smash that like button like everyone's saying.
Yes.
On the.
Do it. Hack into your loved one's Gmail accounts and do it for them too. That might be illegal.
Probably, yeah, you probably don't want to do that. Yeah. Please like us over there. It is great. We don't have a ton for the show today, but we got some stuff. David is coming in, of course, not knowing.
I got a question for everyone out there.
Yeah.
They can't answer because
they can in chat if we're watching live.
Do you keep your wallet in your back pocket?
Oh, I like this.
Because Ryan and I were talking about this beforehand, and I think that is a social construct. It's thrown onto us by the man. It has nothing to do with the fact that I have a Costanza wallet.
Okay, this is my wallet.
Yeah.
And show,
this is my Costanza
wallet. Put it right
wallet.
To the camera. Yeah. Put it closer to the camera. Yeah.
You see it?
Okay. Look at the other way. The other way.
It shows. You want?
No, the.
Which way do you want it?
Show the other way. Turn around.
So
you can see the cards coming this way. Makes it look. There you go. That's the shot. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You have a lot of stuff in there.
So it's a big, thick wallet. Now, but here's my thing is, even when I had a much slimmer wallet in my younger days, I never bought into this whole put it in your back pocket thing. It doesn't make any damn sense. First, your sensation in your butt cheek is a lot worse than the sensation in your upper thigh. You're going to get a lot more sensation up here. If somebody's trying to rob you, don't you want it in your front pocket?
If I'm walking through some European city, I put it in my front pocket.
Right. Yeah. If you're sitting down for a long time, what are you doing with that thing?
If I'm in the car for a long drive, I take it out of my back pocket.
Right. But me, a philosopher king, I don't have to do anything with it. I can just leave it in my pants. You're not some woman with a slim fitting pants that have pockets that are just decoration. Every pair of pants I have has pockets that are this big. Throw the wallet in it. It'll be fine.
I could do I do phone, front right pocket, and I'll have lip balm usually. I'll put it in there. And then my front left pocket is my keys. So it would be hard to do the wallet and keys in the same way.
You have two pockets, correct?
Yeah, one for phone. Where would you put your phone then? Do you phone?
Okay, again, how slim are your pockets?
I don't want wallet and phone in the same pocket.
Why not?
I don't know. I guess.
Are you worried about the bulge?
It would be still thinner than your damn wallet. So I don't know what the hell.
I can fit this thing in my front pocket, and it's fine. It's great. It's a wonderful experience.
Same pocket as your phone.
Sometimes. And then I look like I have a tumor, but
wait,
it's fine.
Wait, you change? You don't do it the same time every time?
No.
You are
I am a chaos agent. I throw them in, and sometimes, and that's why I walk out of the house sometimes not having my keys, not having my wallet. But no, you just throw it all in there, and then you walk.
Yeah. Quinn saying keys, wallet in one pocket. Quinn, can we get your contact information? Because I'm going to report you to the police. Obviously. That's no, you can't do that.
No, wallet in back pocket is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Alex has an interesting theory that you are carrying the Communist Manifesto in your wallet. I would assume.
No, that stays right here. I've actually got a special insert on my shirt to make sure it just resides right next to my heart.
We got a lot of people commenting. It seems like more. We got some back. We got some front. All right, but But it's true. Like, if I'm going to walk around, like, I'm going to Paris, like, or wherever, some European country, some city, somewhere.
Somewhere where you are afraid.
You could get your wallet stolen, like, people, pickpockets are hanging around. I guess you go to, like, a tourist area in L.A.
Thing. You could walk around literally anywhere and get your shit stolen from your back pocket, and you wouldn't ever realize it.
Right.
Because you have virtually no sensation in your butt cheek.
Hmm. I think you would.
Probably. And probably so you don't have any sensation in your butt cheek from sitting on the goddamn thing all the time.
That's true. Yours is so big, there was no way they could get it out. Like, you wouldn't know. Like,
No. This is a weight. Like, if you remove this from anywhere
you're
on
like
my person.
You're walking here, and then you start walking here. I'm like, something
actually,
happened.
Most of this is not credit cards. If you notice, there's a finely layered sense of steel right there. It's just for the weight, you know? Just to make sure it feels like something. You heard it right then.
That's heavy as shit. What the hell kind of – you have like a library card from high school
But I've got like a bunch of my daughter's stuff. Like I just got her swim card. You know, there's a bunch of shit in here.
Gotcha.
But also right. I'm a guy who just like – I don't know. Maybe I'll need that. And it's like a AAA card from 4 years ago. I don't know, man.
I mean, AAA cards are good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bought a slipper
old,
wallet.
Old medical insurance that I don't need. I mean, I could probably filter this thing right now. We should make that an episode sometime in April where we'll just clean out my wallet.
I would love to do that.
And do a little story
time. Kind of go through.
Yeah.
Do you have pictures in there of your kids?
No, God, no.
So all that shit.
Well, I mean, except for my daughter's swim card, which she took the picture like 2 days ago. But no. No, there are no pictures of anyone in this thing. Well, who knows? Let's see.
Yeah.
See, no, Matt, no pictures.
See, Matt makes a lot of sense here. You know, he's like, that was the wrong one. Where are you, Matt?
Oh, man, I've got Georgia car insurance. I've got an old check that I never cashed in here. Damn.
You have a check that you never cashed?
It's like $2, but yeah.
Why do you have a check for $2?
I don't know, man.
Try to put Matt's coming up. I don't think it worked.
You ever get those?
Oh, here it goes. Keys, earbuds in one front pocket, phone in the other front pocket, wallet in back pocket. I kind of do the exact same thing if I put my earbuds in there. But I do put – I always have lip balm. I always put that in my phone pocket.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So Matt and I are in the same.
You just carry lip balm too.
I always do.
Wow.
I don't know why. You don't carry it?
No.
Interesting.
My lips don't get dry like that.
I mean, kind of do. So I always have lip balm going.
It's because I've got a natural humidifier on my face.
Ah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark said you're like Costanza on Seinfeld, but you already made that joke. So.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. It was already done.
It's a classic. It's the Costanza.
Yeah. All right.
It is getting a little worn though. I mean, it's starting to get a little bit torn.
Do you see the people that have the they like make a wallet out of duct tape?
Yeah, duct tape wallets.
That's
not people. That's an actual business that does that now.
And the ones that have like the RFID or whatever protection things, or I forget what it is, but some of those look weird, and they have like there's like a circle on top of it. So there'd be like I don't want to put that in my pocket. I want it to be flat. So okay.
You don't want to talk about this anymore?
We can if you want.
No, I'm good.
Alex says Ryan will do anything to not talk about basketball. USC-UCLA basketball is tonight. I went to the last one. I don't think I'm going to go to this one.
Which is funny because it's the home game for USC.
Yeah, it's just like whatever.
It's actually farther for you.
It That's probably about the same to get to Westwood and
time wise, but not mileage.
Yeah. Yeah, probably true. But I don't know. I might go. I might not. We got my.
I'm not going.
My intern's going. Yeah, you never go. You never go to these things.
No.
Pac-12 championship, you're going to go, right?
I'm bordering on no at this point. But I'll let you know.
I don't think I'm going to go.
I'm going to give you the definitive word next week. I promise.
Okay. Isn't it going to be? No. It's early March. Yeah. If you don't go, I don't think I'm going to go.
That's sad. You should go.
Because that was like the whole point. Like,
so we could have a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a great time with you in Vegas.
I know. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm glad we're planning our social calendar here on the podcast.
Well, why would we talk about... Yeah, they said we shouldn't talk
about basketball. What are we supposed to talk about today?
We have... That's the breaking news. Boom. Jake Dickert gets a contract extension. You might know him as Washington State's former defensive coordinator, now head coach, taking over for the... non-vaxxed one, but yeah, they gave him an extension until 2027.
Isn't it just a one-year extension?
I thought it was two, maybe, or something.
I don't know. I think it's like basically a rollover.
Yeah. They got to get that offense going, because what I saw in the bowl game was my eyes were bleeding.
Yep.
But he was very popular when he took over as the interim. I think he can still do some really good things there.
Gonna be hard. It's a hard job when Washington and Oregon State are all up, which appears to be the case right now. But they showed enough last year that it's okay. But that offense was big shitty, and also the defense kind of fell apart at the end of the year. I think for Dickert, it's really critical that Cam Ward works out in a big way next year.
Yeah.
Because that's the best thing you could say right now is that the jury is out. And you could also make some much less favorable conclusions after year one. But I think, you make the kind of the bold decision to dump your quarterback and bring in a new one. That new one has to work out. And you get a pass on the first year, but Cam Ward really needs to work out next year. That offense needs to be, at least top 40, top 50. And it wasn't this year.
It was pretty bad. Yeah, it was 7-6 2 years in a row. I know he wasn't the full coach for 2021. The Sun Bowl? They're supposed to play Miami, and they canceled, and they got Central Michigan and ended up losing that game. And then losing to Fresno State. Just getting absolutely trucked by Fresno State.
Yep.
In the LA Bowl, but what were the best wins? At Wisconsin, that was a good win. Outside of that, it was like at Stanford, at Arizona, ASU at home. Wasn't like the Washington win. There wasn't like the Apple Cup win kind of thing that you would like build on. Like the Wisconsin one, but that was so early,
Yeah.
First full year for Jake Dickert, and he'll be there for several. But like you said, it's not easy for Kalen DeBoer to turn it around like that and win 11 games in year one. You're like, uh-oh. And what did they do? Like, they had a really good offense. Their defense kind of sucked. You can't have a shitty offense, and that's Washington State kind of had that for a lot of the year. Do you want to do schedule first? Oh, I'm sorry.
Should we do the other bit of news, the Pac-12 news, or do you want to do the schedule?
Oh, yeah, we can do
the schedule. We can do like a little bit of analysis, a quick gut check wins prediction. But for the other piece is just news.
Yeah, this is – and John Wilner's done a great job covering this, and I think
– why'd you have to qualify it? John Wilner's done a great job. We love John.
And
didn't need to say anything specific. He's just doing a great job out there.
He is. Canzano, I don't know if Canzano
also,
had it first.
Also,
when it came
also.
Out. Yep.
Juan Gilner, thoughts.
Juan Gilner. Oh. Wilner's just kind of like, that's stuck in my head, Wilner. So I don't know if I can go.
What about, Canzano.
I like mine better.
Okay, fine.
So the Pac-12, if you don't know what the sort of potential scandal story is, and Wilner had a bunch of this. We knew in the beginning that there was a network partner, that the Pac-12 did an internal audit, and it turns out from what Wilner was reporting, basically the Pac-12 did an audit with one of their Pac-12 network partners, who happens to be Comcast, thinking, hey, we're not getting enough money from these guys. And to be fair, the Pac-12 doesn't know the subscriber data for Comcast. Comcast keeps that. So they kind of tell you, here's what the subscribers are, and then this is what you're getting. So the Pac-12 doesn't know it. But they're thinking, we're not getting paid enough. Let's do an audit. Well, they do an audit, and they find out not only are you you're getting more than you should have been getting, $5 million a year more. And this is back in 2017, which is crazy. So you're thinking like, oh, yeah, I think, you know, I should be getting more money. Let's dig into this. And you're like, oops, I've actually been getting $5 million surplus every year. So Pac-12 Network President Mark Shurkin, I think he was only around on the job for like 3 months back then. And the CFO, Brett William, so they both end up getting fired last week. They were there. And Wilner goes into some of the reporting, like, did Larry Scott know? Did you know any of the other executives around there know? So it's interesting what happened is. But to do an internal audit thinking like, oh, yeah, we should just be getting more money from Comcast. And they've overpaid the Pac-12 over the last decade. $50 million. So that's $4 million per school. And we don't know how this is going to come out. You know, George Klyavkov wasn't
maybe
around.
They'll just be nice and let him have it.
Yeah. Wilner was thinking, no. Wilner was thinking that they're just going to withhold payments for the next couple years. But if it breaks it down per school, it would be like $2 million. Each school would not get $2 million over the next 2 years. And this contract is the exact kind of same timeline as the network, you know, the media rights deal. So the summer of 2024, when USC and UCLA are leaving, that's when this contract with the Pac-12 Network ends as well. So it'd be $2 million, $2 million, that basically Comcast is probably going to say, we're not paying you guys that much. To be overpaying by $5 million seems like a lot. Like, I don't know how much you'd be paying. Like, that seems like a lot to just pay. It almost seems like it'd be double what you would be getting. But somehow Comcast never caught it. The Pac-12 caught it and then just didn't say anything about it. And then Comcast figured it out. And now they're like, hey, dude, we've overpaid you for 10 years. I don't know. What do you think about this whole story? It's kind of crazy.
I mean, it's awesome. I mean, it's really funny. Like, just goes to show you how, you know, these mega corporations are not run by the best and brightest. Comcast, especially. I would say... if there's anything that's going to kind of break the back of the Pac-12, it's this sort of crap, not the, you know, not the like nature of a TV deal, but like an actual school like Oregon State or whatever, not getting $2 million the next 2 years each year. I mean, it does have a significant impact on their bottom line.
Yeah.
I still don't think it will offset the fact that the Pac-12's next media deal will probably be at least competitive with the Big 12s and probably a little bit more. But certainly not good. Like at this moment to have this kind of a, it's not just a PR fiasco. It's an actual bottom line fiasco. That of course isn't Klyavkov's fault.
Right.
But still, it still reflects poorly. Here's the real question. If you were Pac-12 executive A or B in this situation, would you have reported it?
Yeah, and I think Wilner...
Okay, you're thinking. Hang on.
Yeah, yeah.
You have experience with major TV networks as this person, right? And you understand that these people largely running these TV networks are, one, only there for a short time, and two, cretinous climbers, right? So you're probably sitting there thinking, are they going to check this? Because they've been overpaying us for 6 years.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. So are they going to check this? And if they're not... who are we serving here? Like, what's the point? I mean, we're cretinous too, but is it better for the money to come to these, you know, these highfalutin academic institutions, or for it to stay with the bloodless, soulless Comcast? So I would say, actually,
soulless.
I would actually say this was like Robin Hood, you know? They were stealing from the rich to give to the poor. Frankly, these guys shouldn't have been fired. They should be celebrated.
Yeah.
So
I think if I'm one of those executives, I'm especially Shurkin was like only there for 3 months. I think you go, you have to give it to the boss, right? And what did Larry Scott say? He said he was not just running the, why was he getting paid more than like the SEC commissioner and the Big Ten commissioner? Because he was also a network executive. And so he's the head of all that. So I can't imagine them not telling him this is what's going on. And then it's like, this is at your feet and
so,
you decide.
All right,
not
so your deal would be tell my boss and then let my boss decide. Okay. And I think that's fair. And then, but if you're Larry Scott in that situation, let's say this buck actually did stop with him.
Okay.
What are you doing? Are you telling Comcast, hey, you guys have been paying us too much money? Or like anybody who's been paid a little bit too much in their final paycheck from a job? Yeah, I guess it's just the price of doing business. I'm not coming back to him and saying, okay, here's your $85 back.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
That's a little different. That's a one-time, you know,
okay,
whatever.
But all right, so they've been ongoing overpaying you $5 million a year. You understand it's a bureaucratic nightmare to get that money back. You also understand, well, like these schools have spent that money. That money is gone.
Yeah.
So what do I do here? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Tell me what you're doing, Ryan. I want to know the answer.
And I think Wilner talked about this on the podcast that they do, but like think of 2018 when Larry Scott's trying to sell an executive, you know, like equity partnerships in the Pac-12 network, right? And in the Pac-12 conference, and you're trying to make hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever it was. And if you're, oh, by the way, the Pac-12 network is now, you know, 50 million in debt or whatever. It's like, you don't want to like show something's worth less when you're trying to sell like this equity, you know, shares in your conference, in your network. So, and there, I mean, a lot of people think they're going to sell the Pac-12 network because that contract goes up at the end of next year, right? Well, now if you have to sell the Pac-12 network, it's basically $50 million extra in debt. Like this isn't good. You know, this is not good for the Pac-12 in general. It's not a good look.
I would say the only misstep they made was doing the audit in the first place.
Because they thought they were getting underpaid.
But what was the basis for that conclusion? I would love to figure that one out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because as you said, the amounts we're talking about, it must have been they must have thought they were getting underpaid significantly from what was already a pretty, I mean, they must have already been getting like 5 or 10 million per school.
You would think, right? And you're like, if you're overpaid by 5 million a year.
Yeah.
So there's no way. So Comcast, you would have to be at least getting
a drop in the bucket. It had to have been a considerable, like at least an even amount on the other end, right?
Right. 5 or 10 million. So maybe they were getting 15 million. They were supposed to be getting 10, something like that. But you felt you should get 20 million instead of 15, or I don't know, but really you're going to get 10.
Yeah. So a real bad assessment of the situation from whoever decided to do an audit. And yeah, I think at that point you just cross your fingers and hope they don't figure it out. If you don't catch it at the beginning, then you quickly give the money back because it's worth, you want to avoid the risk. But once that's already accumulated to like $30 million, which is when it is in 2017, I think you just whistle and hope for the best. Victimless crime. I mean, who cares about screwing over a cable company?
Well, now there's a mess, though, to deal with. And you're kind of doing the media rights deal negotiation stuff all at the same time. Not good for public perception. So this was not just more egg on the Pac-12's face,
I guess.
But yeah, they've done a great job.
I applaud them for trying.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see what they're able to do. We want to talk about the schedule, though. So
yes, we do.
You don't. I mean, I wasn't here last week. And so
I talked about it.
Where?
In the podcast last week.
What? You came in here and just...
Yeah.
Did you just come in
here? Did it not record? Was it not live? I was talking into that damn camera the entire time.
I got a graphic of it.
You want to send me a link so I'm not like just talking out my butt?
I can send you... Like if you could just Google Pac-12 schedule. Yeah. So we got the Pac-12 schedule...
Yeah,
up here. Let's go through each team. We'll just go like in alphabetical order that they have it on the screen because I have like a cool graphic here. First, we got
Arizona Wildcats.
Arizona.
Yeah. Middle by week eight. So that's pretty good. They're out of conference schedule. Instead of North Dakota State, you got NAU. They do have to go on the road and play Mississippi State. And they get UTEP at home. So more manageable than last year. Their home slate for the conference, you got Washington, Oregon State, UCLA, and Utah. So, you know, some tough games there. And they got road games against Stanford, USC, which is potentially a Friday or a Saturday game, Washington State, Colorado, and Arizona State. So don't have to play Oregon, but they are playing Washington. They got
to get to
play
Stanford. Don't have to play Cal is probably good too. I mean, I think Cal is going to be horrible too, but I think Stanford's going to be next level horrible.
Yeah.
So I think that's,
and you get Washington State, and not, I mean, well, you got Oregon State too, so that sucks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not. I mean, as far as such things go, it's okay. I mean, yeah, Oregon State and Oregon are both very good, so that's not ideal. Going at Mississippi State, that's, you know, probably a sure loss. But Northern Arizona, they should beat. UTEP, they should beat. I mean, I could see it. I could see it going a couple different ways. I think a bowl game is potential. You know, you look at it, and Northern Arizona, UTEP wins. Stanford, I think a win, even though it's at Stanford. Mississippi State, Washington, USC, Washington State, and Oregon State are all going to be really tough. UCLA, it's a little bit of a unknown at this point because of the quarterback situation, but I think it'll also be tough. But then you close at Colorado, then you get Utah home at Arizona State. I think they can beat Colorado. I think they might be able to beat Arizona State. And then the real question is, can they essentially steal one against a group of like six schools to get to bowl eligibility? But I think it's on the horizon for them is potentially six and six.
I think so too. All right, let's go with next up.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Put the schedule back up there. What is that first game? I don't know. They're playing some... Southern Utah, okay. Yeah. But you have all the out-of-conference games at home, including Oklahoma State and Fresno State. Both of those games are not going to be easy. And then they play USC right after that at home. So like a four straight home games, but... You could be 1-3. You know, that's not...
They won't be. Whenever you get that sequence of home games, there's always going to be... So I think they've got a decent chance to have a pretty good team this year. I like what Kenny Dillingham's doing in the portal.
It's better to add a lot of guys in the portal than lose them, right? Like,
I mean, they lost...
That's a common theme.
They lost a chunk too, but I think
they... They did, but last year was just like lose.
Yeah.
We've seen teams like, oh, Stanford, lose.
If you want to talk about a team losing, Oklahoma State.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're going to be favored against Oklahoma State, and they should win that game. So that's, I think they'll probably be 2-2. Fresno State's just, I mean, they're going to be in the post-Hayner era, aren't they? Does he have another year?
No, I think he's gone.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's gone.
Your pause there was sending my heart a flutter. They have a chance, but Jeff Tedford, I think, is a good coach, obviously. So that's going to be a tough slate to start out with, but I think 2-2 is reasonable to think. And then it eases up. I mean, they've got at Cal and Colorado. It's not out of the question that heading into the bye week, after the first six games, they're 4-2.
Yeah.
And then it's just a matter of, okay, can you get to bowl eligibility with a final slate that it's Washington, Washington State, Utah, UCLA, Oregon, and Arizona? Arizona's winnable.
For sure.
Rest of that's very tough.
Washington State at home. Yeah.
So...
I think
bowl eligibility is possible.
Right. The problem is the Colorado game. Like, how good is Colorado going to be? Are there? We just knew this year that there was teams that you could just beat.
Yeah, and I'm kind of throwing them still into the sure win category for a lot of teams, but okay. They're not. And I think it's just reflexive at this point. But Colorado, we'll get to them in a second. But they've loaded up.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to, next up we have...
California Golden Bears.
Up on the screen for you.
They're going to be ass. Huge ass.
What's that first game?
At North Texas.
Probably okay.
Might lose that one. Why are you going at North Texas? What are you doing, Cal?
You need the money, man. It's like a pay game for them.
Yeah, is it a buy game? Did North Texas buy you?
Yeah. But Auburn... That's probably not good. And then Idaho. you know.
Yeah, they could beat Idaho, maybe, but that coach was pretty good last year. He almost beat Washington State. Cal's just going to be shitty. I mean, looking at the schedule, can tell you one thing, but they're just not going to be very good. They avoid Arizona, and they avoid Colorado, which is so probably not
the
good.
The worst, yeah.
Looking at it, I think they're going to be like a two-win team, and Justin Wilcox gets fired.
Yeah, they have a week eight bye, and they go, after the out-of-conference schedule, you're on the road at Washington. You get Arizona State at home, give her a shot there. Oregon State at home, and then on the road at Utah before the bye. And so, I don't know, you got like two wins at that. That's going to be bad. And you finish up with USC, Oregon, Washington State, Stanford, and then UCLA.
Yeah, they can beat Stanford. They can beat Idaho. Who else are they beating? What else are you throwing in the win category?
Yeah, potentially Arizona State.
North Texas, I guess. I know North nothing Texas. About them.
I mean, you could beat Stanford. You could beat Washington State. We don't know.
So 4-8, maybe? What's the high end? Do you think this is going 6-6 in any reasonable scenario?
Not on paper right now. No. You know? Okay,
Here's a good rule of thumb. If a guy wasn't hired 2 years ago and you can't game out a scenario where they reasonably get to 6-6, that person should be fired.
That's a very good point. If you're looking at the thing and going, how are they going to possibly be any better? Like, because Jake Plummer comes in, looked okay at times, gone, right? Like, what do you do? Like,
and he wasn't Jake Plummer, he was Jack Plummer.
Jack Plummer, sorry. That's the thing.
Jake the Snake.
Jake Plummer. Okay, next up we've got
Colorado Buffalo.
Yeah, this is like the hardest schedule in America, I was reading.
Coach Prime. But one of the things, just in general, let me, let's talk here real quick, just in general. I feel like the Pac-12 thought about the schedule creation. This isn't like 5 years ago when Larry Scott just went into a computer and it didn't matter if you had back-to-back Friday road games and your opponent had a bye against a rival, like none of that stuff. You felt like a lot of the schedules are sort of backloaded where you're going to create these great matchups. I think the Big 12 has been doing this really a good job of that for years where there's good matchups, same weekends, you know, later in the schedule with the teams that you think are going to be good. And Colorado's got so much momentum, they're like front loaded. And I think, you know, that's probably done with intention. And I think that's probably a positive thing that while, you know, if Colorado's like, oh, it's six or something, or I don't think they're going to be that, but you know, it's going to be harder to get hyped up for Colorado if they're 2-7 later in the season. But the beginning of the season, you're going to want to see them no matter what. And they got a lot of marquee games. And I think you can get a bunch of eyeballs on them early on.
You know, I think about it a little bit differently.
Okay.
I think they were mad at him for talking about the ASU game.
Okay, that was the other thing. So Adam Munster Tiger messaged me after this. It's come out since then. Yes. But they applied for a waiver and didn't get it. So it wasn't that they were mad at Coach Prime. They were trying to actually, I think the USC schedule comes into this too, because USC was going to play like 12 straight games again.
Right.
They got a waiver to move it up, and they could have actually moved some other things around if Arizona State and Colorado got their game moved up, but the NCAA said no. So that's not happening, but it wasn't, they were mad at Coach Prime.
They were mad at him
discussing it.
But. Yeah, the schedule's very, very hard. At TCU. TCU, they just played in a big game.
Was it the like Peach Bowl or something?
It was something like that.
Or the Chick-fil-A Bowl.
They got smeared.
The national championship game they were
they
in?
They got smeared into a fine paste. But they played in that game nonetheless. They play Nebraska. It's going to be in a little bit of a rebuild under Matt Rhule, but always have some talent. And Colorado State, which, you know, whatever, at least they're a group of five. And then it's at Oregon. They get both Oregons this year. They avoid Washington and get Washington State, so that's good. They avoid Cal and get Stanford, which is also, like, on the margins, probably good. But it's not an easy schedule. I don't know what's reasonable to expect. This is one where it's kind of like Arizona. They're going to be better, obviously, but how much better? Are they going to contend for a bowl game, or are they going to be like 4-8 better? And I think right now, looking at the schedule, I'd say 4-8. I think they beat – they'll steal one they shouldn't.
Okay.
You know, maybe it's they beat both Nebraska and Colorado State, and it's like, oh, wow, they've really got some momentum. They're 2-1 coming out of non-con. And then they lose to Oregon and USC, but maybe they, you know, beat ASU and then beat Stanford. And they've got 4 at that point, but then they end with 4. I don't know. I think there's a scenario where they end up 6-6, but I think there's also a scenario where it's like 3-9 and kind of disappointing.
And then, so we've seen teams kind of turn around, go into the portal. They've hit the portal very hard. It's definitely going to be a more talented team, but there's a lot of issues there beyond just the players. And I don't know. It might be one of those teams where they can surprise somebody and beat someone you don't expect.
I think they're going to run a 1-1-10 defense.
All DBs.
Yeah, just nothing but cornerbacks, but they're all going to be really good cornerbacks.
Right. Not tacklers, but they cover well.
Oh, so, my God. Yeah. If you throw on them, you're done. You just never will.
Yeah. They got a couple Friday games. The Stanford game at home is Friday. Washington State later in the season is Friday. But, you know, Nebraska, you're talking about two teams that hired like high profile coaches. You know, you got Matt Rhule on one side, Coach Prime on the other. I mean, but to open conference play, Oregon, USC.
Like, they'd get penalized a lot running a 1-1-10 defense.
It'd probably be. that's true. Too many men on the field. Again, like, coach, what's up?
It'll feel like a 1-1-10, all right?
Yeah.
Enough of your shit.
Nice. Okay. Next up, what are we doing next? We have...
Oregon Ducks.
Duckies.
Yep. They're there.
Portland State.
Yep.
Texas Tech on the road. And Hawaii.
Yeah. I mean, I think Texas Tech's decent enough program. But Oregon should sweep through that. You know, if they don't, bit of a problem. It sets up really well for them to be 5-0 heading into Washington right after the bye week. They get a bye week right before.
A little bit early. This is the earliest bye week we've seen so far, week 6.
Yeah.
So, it's reasonable bye week.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sets up for them to be 5-0 at that point and national contender, the whole deal. So that's – and we'll see with Washington's schedule, but I think that's setting up for that to be a true marquee game that's going to be, you know, national – national considerations, you know, game day, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, that Washington game is in week 7, and it's also what was the week? So USC plays Notre Dame that week, and I think there was one other big one. But anyway, yeah, that's a big week. Both teams are playing it after a bye, so Washington and Oregon both get a bye. So that's good for the conference. And the way the later part of the schedule goes, it's you're not seeing Oregon have to play like back to back of the, you know, the conference favorites. You know, coming out of the bye, you get Washington, then you get Washington State, you know, and then Utah on the road, which, you know, not going to be easy. Cal at home, okay. USC at home, then Arizona State on the road, and then Oregon State. So, you know, Washington, you get a break, then Utah, you get a break, and then USC, and then you get Oregon State. So I like the way that's sort of set up for Oregon later, is that you have a tough game followed by a little bit easier one, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it's fair. Yeah, I mean, looking at it, I would say, you know, they avoid UCLA, which is probably not great, and they don't get Arizona. They get Arizona State instead, which is probably a wash.
Yeah.
So, I mean, looking at it,
I like its spacing, though. The spacing
is good. I think it sets up for them to go at least 9-3.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 9-3, 10-2 for sure. And it's one of those things where week 7, if they're 5-0 and beat Washington, like, I mean, they're probably going to be a top 5 team or something, right? And it kind of sets things up that way. That if they take care of business on the road to Texas Tech, like just like we had this year, there was a lot of Pac-12 teams that were ranked high, and it was great. And mostly it was because you had, you know, 5 or 6 good teams and then 5 or 6 crappy teams. But this way, I think the schedule kind of might work out a little bit, so you can get a little bit momentum early on. And they don't have that Georgia game. You know, you got Texas Tech, so just go win that one. Don't don't like lay an egg against Texas Tech.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Utah did against Florida last year.
Exactly.
Okay. Next up, we've got
Oregon State Beavers.
The big overarching conversation that we all have to have is how is DJU, who started many games in the ACC, going to handle the step up in competition going to the Pac-12?
Yeah. San Jose State right out of the gate. Come on.
Right out of the gate. He's got to play San Jose State, UC Davis, and San Diego State. These are the pride of the two California university systems. You've got two CSUs in the first three games and a UC.
That's a lot.
That's tough to handle. Looking at the schedule, I think they're 3-0, no question about it. And then Pac-12 stuff always gets weird, but sort of like with Oregon, they'll be probably 4-0 heading into a big matchup with Utah.
Yeah.
Where, you know, that will decide some things as to whether this is a real contender or whether it's not. I kind of think they are, and looking at, you know, who they avoid USC. You know, it's UCLA instead of USC, and it's UCLA at home.
And that Utah is a Friday game, week 5.
Even if
five.
UCLA is as good as they were this year, that's a really winnable game for Oregon State at home.
Yeah.
So I like this for them. They've got a back-to-back roadie, which is not great, at Arizona, at Colorado, which takes two very winnable games and makes them much more difficult than they otherwise would be.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's... it's not too bad. They do have 6 road games. That's always worth noting. They didn't schedule themselves any favors by having to go at San Jose State, but it's San Jose State. You should be able to win that one.
Yeah.
It's not going at Fresno State. So I don't know. I look at it, and again, I see a schedule where we're going to predict one thing, and Oregon State is probably going to outperform our expectation yet again.
Unless I pick them to go like 10-2,
11-1, like you did this year.
I said 10-2.
Whatever, I don't remember.
They have two Friday games. The Utah game is big, week 5. That's a really big one, obviously. And then the rivalry game with Oregon, week 13. That's also a Friday game. But Washington, Oregon, back to back to end the season. That's going to tell you a lot, right?
Oh yeah,
right at the end. So, yeah, Beavs. They should be good again, which is great. Speaking of teams that are going to be good, this isn't one of them, but I was just mentioning that.
Stanford Cardinal.
You must have been talking about Hawaii, their first opponent.
Hawaii.
Teams that are going to be good? No? No, probably not Hawaii either.
Probably not so.
Stanford could lose to Hawaii in the opener.
It's on the road.
It's on the road.
They don't have a stadium still. I drove by, like... Aloha Stadium, which is like condemned, right? And aren't they building one? Is Hawaii football? I think they're building their stadium. I'm going to Google that. You keep going.
Well, anyway, Stanford's going to be horrible. It really doesn't matter what their schedule is. They've got one win on here, maybe, in Sacramento State. But the thing is, Sacramento State is one of those, like, you know, decent, whatever they're in, FCS. Didn't they just take the coach? Isn't that who their coach is? Sac State's former head coach, Troy Taylor.
Troy Taylor.
Okay. Yeah, now they're playing him this year.
Nice.
It's weird.
Let me put that up there. I got his picture somewhere.
Yeah, I remembered Stanford hired a coach this week.
You didn't last
week. No, I did not remember last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever that was. Yeah, Stanford's horrible. I don't know if you can really analyze their schedule without acknowledging that they're going to be horrible. This is going to be a very bad year for them. Hopefully it's the start of a long rebuild, but... They're in trouble. Like it's going to be like 2-10 again.
Yeah. Hawaii's in some temporary stadium, and I don't think their new stadium is going to be ready until like 2026. So this is like,
okay, cool. Yeah. You're going to be playing on like a grass field.
Well, they do the, so when I go there, we used to do the Polynesian Bowl. Did you ever cover that or no? Oh, you've been in Hawaii, so you have not.
Yeah. Keep rubbing it in.
I didn't know, but they do it. And you could have come for work and write it off. Tracy would have paid for you to go to Hawaii. Come on.
I don't
man.
Know. Yeah.
But you go, and it was at Aloha Stadium, which is an absolute dump, as you know. Now they're playing at Kamehameha High School, which is a really nice high school. It's got like a 270-degree ocean view from like their high school football field. But it's not like a stadium. I don't know where the temporary one for University of Hawaii is, but it's small. It's the smallest in FBS. And
it doesn't matter. Stanford could lose that game because they're bad. It doesn't matter where they're playing.
Yeah.
They might lose to Sac State at home. They're going to be really bad this year.
They got two Friday games, the opener, Hawaii, and then
this is what you
Colorado.
Do with a bad team. You stick them in really bad spots, too.
Yeah. They end the season Notre Dame at home.
Yeah, this is what you don't do. You don't give a bad team gift wins. That's a good scheduling move.
Yeah.
Stick them on Friday nights.
All right. Yeah. Sorry. Sorry to the Zodiac Killer, but I don't think Stanford's going to
be really bad again.
They're going to be bad. That'll be the one thing. Like, even if we screw up, we did a pretty good job predicting this season, this last year. If we screw it up this year, we're probably going to get the Stanford one correct. All right. Next up, we're going to these LA schools.
UCLA Bruins.
Yeah, so UCLA has an early bye after September, basically. The last weekend of September, they're on a bye, and then they play eight straight games. It's a really easy schedule again. Not quite as easy as this year, but Coastal Carolina at home. I mean, that's been a dangerous program, but UCLA should still be comfortably favored at home. NC Central is in FCS. They should and not a good FCS. They should have no trouble with that one. At San Diego State, I mean, it's given them some slight trouble in the past, but UCLA should be able to win that one. And then it gets into conference play. They finally get off the Washington-Oregon slate, and they take on Washington State and Oregon State. Oregon State, as we talked about, is pretty good, but getting Washington State instead of Washington is ideal. And it's at home. I mean, they've got a back-to-back roadie. They got stuck with at Oregon State and at Stanford, but it's Stanford.
Yeah.
So that's not the end of the world. But
almost a bye.
Almost a bye. And then it's Colorado at home at Arizona. Colorado, as we talked about, could be a lot better. At Arizona shouldn't be a cakewalk. After all, UCLA did lose to them at home this year. Sorry, did my volume change?
Mm.
Did it go up a little bit?
Well, you know, UCLA didn't lose to Arizona, right? There was a close game or something. They lost to Arizona?
Yeah, just before the UCLA USC game, actually.
Jeez.
Yeah. I know. Interesting.
They lost that one too.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did. But anyway, I mean, looking at it, 8-4-ish, 9-3-ish, something like that.
I would say the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's the, I mean, I know we're not joking about
scuttlebutt of
the contract extension and the Chip Kelly stuff, but like
temperature?
If it's a back to back 9-3.
Which there's a lot of factors playing into it now. Getting Dante Moore, you're going to probably start a true freshman at quarterback this year. I think if they go 8-4, I don't think there's any way they're getting out from under Chip Kelly. Because he can say rightly at that point, well, we've got a freshman quarterback. He's going to get better and we're going to be really good next year.
Yeah.
So the only way is if the wheels really come off. UCLA to be done with Chip Kelly after this year. That's my just like read of it at this point.
And then it'll be a transition to the Big Ten the next
year. Yeah, and I think that might present, if UCLA is interested, they could look for a lot of escape hatches, and that might present a good opportunity, but I just have a hard time seeing it. Knowing UCLA, knowing the politics around it, like, are they really going to fire a guy who goes 8-4 with a freshman quarterback?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Probably not.
And looking at this, the wheels would have to come off to do a lot worse than 8-4.
All right. Next up, we have
USC Trojans.
Yeah. You guys start in August.
So they have a week zero game. And I'll just give you kind of quick background. They have the longest stretch, 9 in a row, because they have a week 3 bye. Originally, in week 13, they're supposed to have BYU. BYU goes to the Big 12. They have to cancel that game. So it's hard to get someone to fill in a Week 13 game. That was the beauty of having BYU around. No Week 13 game. It would look like they were going to take where their bye was in Week 3 and put in San Jose State. So then you would have 12 straight games, which kind of sucks. In this case, they were going to have 10 because they have a Week 3 bye. And it's because of the Stanford Notre Dame, USC kind of thing. But they at least would have had a bye week 3. Once BYU canceled, now you weren't going to have a bye week 3. You were going to play 12 straight games and have a bye week 13. They did apply for...
You and your irrelevant Midwestern friend can stop being so precious about having the at Notre Dame game in October. What about that?
You don't have to worry about that anymore because they're joining the Big Ten. But whatever. But that was the thing. And I was told by USC people that the Pac-12 was actually – so for anyone that's out there, conspiracy that they were trying to screw, that I was told the Pac-12 was very accommodating. They tried to do whatever they could. The solution they came up with was ask for a waiver and play San Jose State in week zero. So at least you have some sort of bye. And they do. So they play three weeks.
I mean, it's a really stupid schedule. Like they got, I don't even think they got screwed. I just think they got the dumbest possible schedule.
It's pretty dumb. But the thing is that's controversial is now you have a bye in week 13 that they've had a couple times before, but there's no game, right? That's your last game. But if you're in the Pac-12 championship game, say they make it again and say they play like Oregon or Washington, Oregon and Washington are coming off. Washington would be coming off a short week. Oregon is Friday to Friday because they're playing Oregon State. But say it's Washington. Washington has 6 days, and USC would have 13. You know, so you would have an advantage probably over whoever you're playing in the championship game. But you also have to get through nine straight weeks. That includes, you know, ending with Washington, Oregon, UCLA, you know, Utah, Notre Dame.
I mean, starting with two road games, back to back.
Yeah. So there's sort of a mix, but like. If USC happens to make it, they get through that, and you're Washington, are you pissed if Washington makes it? They're like, we have a Saturday game, then a Friday game, and USC's got a week off, you know? So I don't know. I don't know what your thoughts on that are, but I know some people kind of get upset.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been the only way is to move around Notre Dame, and that's just not done. But moving them into September somehow, getting them to finagle their schedule a little bit more would have been the only way to avoid it.
Yeah, and I don't know if they can – that either, but yeah, so they're backloaded to go Notre Dame, Utah, Cal, Washington, Oregon, UCLA. Like, that's a 5-game stretch that's not going to be
good news. All right, so good news, only 5 road games. All the non-conference opponents are at home. All the non-conference opponents, well, no, sorry,
Notre Dame's
on the road.
Yeah, that's not super easy.
Yeah, but only 5 road games. Hey, oompa. I was throwing Stanford in the non-conference already because they're not going to be in the Big Ten. They're going to be in the Mountain West of the Ivy League. But San Jose State and Nevada are both cupcakes. Stanford's a cupcake. Should be 3-0 heading into that bye week.
Yeah.
The question is, are they going to emerge from ASU and Colorado? Are they going to emerge with a kind of a shake-up loss is the real question.
Because it's back-to-back road games.
Yeah. And that's... If I'm eyeing a concerning situation, it's one of those two games because those are going to be for those two programs early like litmus test, yeah. Early Super Bowl, early we're going to have all the fans out, we're going to go crazy for this game. It's going to be all that kind of vibe and hype. Now Colorado will have it a little bit with Nebraska, but this will be, I think, even more than that because I think Deion's going to understand that while Nebraska matters to Colorado fans. USC matters to football fans.
Yeah.
And so I think they're going to get both of those teams' best shots. They both come on the road. That's tough. But once you get past that, I mean, I don't think Notre Dame's going to be any good again. I think Arizona and Utah.
Notre Dame got like the best quarterback transfer in the country. So
I don't think they're going to be any good again.
Okay.
And then Arizona and Utah. Arizona, they should beat at home. Utah, they probably will be favored at home.
Cal's bad.
Washington at home will be a fun game. And then it closes, at Oregon is going to be a very, very tough game. And the thing is, so both of those two opponents are, I mean, they play two of the opponents that I think they're very likely to play again in the Pac-12 championship game in Washington and Oregon in the like preceding weeks, which is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
They'll have 13 days to dissect that very recent film while Oregon and Washington are doing, some very tough games. But, it's a difficult schedule. It's a little bit of a gauntlet with a couple road games, 9 straight games. But then they do get that week off. If they somehow emerge, I think you'll have to say that's an advantage heading into the championship game.
Yeah, if they can, it'll be harder to emerge. Yeah. But if you do, you have an advantage. They did in 2017. They had the bye week, and they beat Stanford, I think. Or was it? I think it was that. All right, we got
Utah Utes.
Yeah, Utah has a bit of a challenging start to the season. They get Florida at home, which should be a win. Legitimately, that should be a win this year.
The damn Gators at home.
It's not in Florida. It's at home. They should beat Florida.
It could be Thursday or Saturday, which is kind of weird.
Then they got to go at Baylor. Yeah, who's designing these damn schedules for Utah?
Yeah.
At Baylor, like,
get the damn win.
What are you doing? But like, seriously, at this late stage in everyone's time as a college football fan, what are you doing scheduling two Power Fives in your non-conference slate? Nobody does that anymore. Don't do it. It's bad news. At Baylor will be tough. Weber State will be easy. Looking at the run of games, they do have back-to-back away games, which is interesting because they only play five. So sort of like USC, they only play five, but they still manage to get them back-to-back.
Yeah.
Washington and Arizona back-to-back in November. Not ideal.
No one has back-to-back road, like, shitty games, like, you know, tough games, at least, that I've seen.
I mean,
so
at Washington's tough, and at Arizona is not a cakewalk.
Right. I mean, but it's not – if it was, like, at Washington and then at –
I still remember 2013 where UCLA had to go back-to-back at Stanford, at Oregon.
Oh,
that was insane.
Terrible. Yeah.
And that was like peak Oregon and peak Stanford.
Right.
And it was peak Jim Mora, and they just got their asses handed to them by both teams.
But that was like the Larry Scott just randomized schedule. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, whatever happens, you know. Like,
whatever happens, happens.
Oh, back-to-back against the two best teams in the – no. Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, Utah should be pretty good again. And looking at the schedule, they avoid Stanford, which isn't great. And they avoid Washington State, which isn't great. It's a tough schedule.
Definitely tough. I mean, you have Washington and Oregon on your schedule. They're playing Washington on the road. The battles with the Ducks have been good. You know, just kind of going back and forth. But SC Oregon back to back. You know, at Washington late in the season. Just get through that BYU game. BYU. Get through the Baylor game. Take care of UCLA at home. And if you're 4-0 going into that Friday night road game against Oregon State, that's going to be good. And that's going to be – I think it's important for the conference for that to sort of happen, you know. UCLA early on, if you got a freshman starting quarterback.
You're going to learn nothing from this past year, are you?
What do you mean?
Nothing.
What?
They're going to lose to Baylor. They're going to lose to Baylor. And they're still going to be a playoff contender because all they have to do at that point is win out.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. You just have to win out, which is a really hard thing to do, but other programs do it.
True.
So if Utah is good enough, they're going to lose to Baylor because it's in Waco. It's going to be a very, very difficult game. It's going to be a very, very difficult atmosphere, and it's a good program. They're just going to lose that game. But then, you know, can they sweep through the remainder of the slate? And that's the real question. And if they can, then they're good enough. They'll make the playoff. And if they can't, they weren't good enough, they won't make the playoff.
Yeah. Week 6 by Friday game against Oregon State, like we mentioned. Potential Thursday game against Florida to start the season. But, yeah, I mean, you end the season at home against Colorado. We'll see. I think it's, you know.
They'll go 9-3 again.
They got a good shot to be better. But I really think it's important to beat Baylor early on. Just, you know, it helps the whole conference if that happens.
No, it doesn't.
All right, it certainly does. Two left.
Washington Huskies.
I'm getting ornery here at the end. You can hear
it. I love it.
Washington. Their bye week comes after September. It's the first week of October. They also have a pretty tough slate. So Boise State, Tulsa. What's interesting about that is there is no FCS. They are not playing in FCS this year. Boise State rebounded a little bit last year. I still think they're probably on a slight decline as a program, but still a tough out. Tulsa, who the hell knows? Who cares? At Michigan State, is going to be a different animal than Michigan State at home, but Mel Tucker really hasn't set the world afire there. Look, if they can come out of that slate 3-0, I think you're once again talking, you know, this is a team that can really, really do something. They do get stuck with a back-to-back roadie, but again, at Stanford, is part of that back-to-back roadie. So that's
technically a bye.
Technically a bye. But then it's at USC.
It's like a vacation. Like,
but then it's at USC.
You're like, we're going to go to the Bay Area this weekend.
Yeah, exactly. So that will be a slight challenge. But overall, I mean, okay, so they avoid UCLA, which isn't great. And they avoid Colorado, which is probably not great. So that's the ding. You know, you're not getting... You know, in aggregate,
they had a really easy schedule, you know, this past year.
So this is actually ideal. You'd want this in year two versus year one.
Yes.
And so it might have been the difference of a couple of wins last year. And now we'll see if they have built enough, especially defensively, to be able to kind of withstand that and get back to, you know, and I think looking at the schedule, get back to like 9 wins this year. And I think you've got to feel really, really good if you're a Washington fan. And if you do anything more than that, you feel ecstatic.
Yeah. And if you're good, if Washington's good, like we think they can be good, you know, you get that road win against Michigan State. You go into the bye week undefeated, right? 5-0, that'd be awesome. And, of course, the Oregon game is enormous after that. And if somehow you're still, you know, say you're 7-0 or, you know, 7-1 or whatever going in, to finish the season, you know, on the road at SC, if you get a win there, that's huge. Then you got Utah at home, Oregon State on the road, and then Washington State. I mean, that's a – if you have like a really good record going into that stretch, every game you win is just going to build on that credibility. So, but it's not going to be easy. Those last four games are tough.
Yeah.
I think it sets up well, and you're going to get a lot of respect, especially late in the season. If you get through the early parts and maybe you get that win against Oregon, or if that's your only loss and then you start beating, like if you're, you know, so what would that be? 5-6-7 So you're like 7-1 and you only lose to Oregon, say. But you beat SC and you beat Utah. Like you're not, you know, 9-1 with that only lone loss to Oregon. You know, you're a top 6-7 team, I think, at this point, right? Or more. So
do you want to know how many, all right, so in 8 years as a head coach between Sioux Falls, Fresno State, and Washington, do you want to know how many losses Kalen DeBoer has averaged per year?
Ooh. So what were the schools he was at?
Sioux Falls, Fresno State, and Washington.
Okay, so he had two. I'm going to see it's average like 3.5 losses.
Per year?
Yeah.
1.3.
What?
1.375, I should say. 1.4.
So this year brought his average down?
They went undefeated 3 times at Sioux Falls.
Oh, okay. Well, that...
He had three total losses in his time there. But even if you narrow it down to just a pure, you know, FBS level head coach, he's 23-8 and rebuilding two programs, one of which was in the COVID year.
Yeah.
He doesn't lose a lot of games, is my point.
True.
So, yeah. I mean, 9-3, I mean, that'd be kind of par for the course.
I would, at this point, yeah, but that – the last game, I mean, and Michael Penix has not been healthy, you know, a lot. In his
career. You're going to see a healthy Penix this year.
If it's, but you get hurt late, like if he's hurt like week 7-8, something like that, how are you going to finish off the, you know, the season against that tough schedule? So, I don't know.
That's a great question.
All right, one last one.
Washington State Cougars.
Washington State, they take on the Pride of Colorado at Colorado State, and then they get Northern Colorado at home. That's a weird one. Here's the big news. Can we get a breaking news alert?
Yeah, we can.
For the first time in, I think, 175 years, they will be hosting an FBS program at home in the non-conference slate.
How crazy is that, that that's never happened?
I mean, it's happened. I just don't remember when. We got that stat. Remember when we had that? Wisconsin is coming to the Palouse on September 9th. That will be a fun game. Their bye week is the last weekend of September. Again, the schedule, they don't take on USC, and they also avoid Utah, so it sets up a little bit easier.
Not bad.
For them. And the non-conference, you know, getting Wisconsin.
That's the best you could miss, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And not having to go at Wisconsin, they beat Wisconsin on the road last year. They should be 3-0 after the non-conference is done. And then it's, you know, it's a question of how they do in conference again. And a lot of it's going to depend on Cam Ward and the development of that offense. But it's a relatively easy slate. I think getting back to 7-5 should be in the cards.
I think so. It's that early, you know, that early before the bye week playing Oregon State at home. You know, not going to be easy. Road games against UCLA, and then you get Arizona at home. You got to, you know, those three conference games around the bye week, like go 2-1, and then I think you got a good shot kind of finishing off, because the, you know, on the road at Oregon's not going to be easy. On the road at Washington's not going to be easy. And then taking care of those teams that like K can you separate yourself from the teams that were really bottom dwellers last year? Because you have Arizona State on the road, Stanford at home, Cal on the road, and then Colorado at home. Those four teams are all like were those beatable teams, very, very beatable from 2022.
Yeah.
And how do you do against them? If you go 2-2, that's not good. Like you should, you know, that's a 3-1, 4-0 thing. And then you're a good team if you can do that.
Well, and what I didn't like last year was how Washington just kind of dominated them in the Apple Cup, too. I think for Washington State, a huge thing with that game is just how are you going to put pressure on Penix? Can Washington keep Penix clean? And if they can keep him clean, you know, is he going to be able to just deliver balls? You know, all over the field and just kind of spray over Washington State.
Jesus. You haven't had an opportunity for like that in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mean for incisive analysis of Washington State football?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just put a picture up of Penix for everybody out there. All right. Well, that's the 2023 schedule. Any thoughts overall? Like,
God, no. We just gave our thoughts for like 40 minutes.
Let's go through each team again and say where we think the trap game is.
Oh, God.
No, I'm just kidding. Why don't we take a break? And we got some questions to get to. Yeah. So back in a minute. Wait, how did we go over an hour doing that?
It was interminable.
Yeah. You were like, that's going to take us like 5 minutes. I'm like, you've met us before.
It would have in a just world.
Gotcha. All right. Got a voicemail for you. Oops. Oh, that's all that downloaded. Okay.
So that's not working because this has happened a couple of times now in the last couple of weeks where his voicemail came through, but then it didn't show up in your little download thing.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to check on that. So I think it was asking about.
And then you didn't save the text, so I can't even look up what you were.
I deleted it. I'll pull it up real quick. I think it was Lyndon Johnson is what he was.
Oh, okay, I'll just answer a question about Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He said, "Let me pull it up."
Cretan.
Dave, if you've read any of Robert Cara's biographies on Lyndon Johnson, what are your thoughts? Other than a question, so thoughts on that. He said they talk about how many years the Democrats had major majorities in the Senate and how they held the House for a really long time. And I was wondering, go back to then, that they were able to hold the majority in the House for as long as they did. What holding any party, holding the House and Senate for that long seems impossible now.
The reason?
Uh-huh.
Because FDR was such a good goddamn president that he held together a coalition even after his death for 20 fucking years. The lesson? Elect the guy who's the closest to a socialist. Just bathe in the popularity. It'll be amazing.
Do it. Interesting.
So that's really what it is. It was the New Deal coalition hung together for a long time after FDR's death. I would say there was general bipartisan agreement about a lot of the New Deal crap. Throw foreign policy out from a domestic policy standpoint. A lot of those Republican presidents from like the 50s and 60s would have been, you know, left of the current Democrats with some of their support of social programs. So there was a lot. I mean, there was a lot of factors, but ultimately it was the same way that Democrats now are still terrified of the ghost of Reagan and getting just completely destroyed in whatever it was, 84. The arch conservatives, and you know, Nutters originating here in Orange County, they were, terrified of, a very popular, leftist president again, like FDR and didn't want to hew too far away from what was obviously and clearly broadly popular social programs that paid out money to the poor.
So you dislike most presidents. I never heard you praise FDR like that.
Well, FDR was bad in a lot of ways. I mean, he turned the Japanese. He was himself a very wealthy man, but in one important respect, he was a class traitor. In that he was a wealthy person who also wanted to steal money from all of his wealthy friends.
Okay,
and he was a a true politician who understood, you know, where power was and how to maintain power, be really popular. As far as presidents go, I mean, he's definitely top five, top three, top two. He's up there. But no, they're all megalomaniac psychopaths. And, you know, should all be chained together at the bottom of a river. But that being said, he was one of the better ones.
Yeah. Psychopaths.
You want a megalomaniac who's on your side, at least. And he, you know, for 70% of the people or so, was more or less on their side.
Nice. We had a question, Alex, or I think he wrote this in the comments. I was going to ask Ryan, who obsessively tweets about USC football the way Jason Shear does about and UCLA basketball. And then I realized the answer is David, who obsessively tweets about USC football the way Jason Shear does. I think maybe meant about UCLA basketball.
So, all right. So Jason,
he
tweets some trolling stuff about UCLA basketball.
Oh, okay.
In a similar vein to the way I tweet about USC basketball. Or USC football.
Yeah, you don't care about USC.
I don't care about anything. The secret to my success is that you just burn out any care in the world.
Mm.
Don't even get married to your own opinions. And that way you just fire them off and they're gone.
Nice.
You don't even have to think about them again.
Okay, do you want to start? I think Hugh Janus is our first one. It's like yes or no.
Sure. Hi, guys. It's your good pal, Hugh Janus. It has been a while since I wrote, but I wanted to check in now that the season is over. My buddy Haywood Jablomi and I came up with a few yes or no questions for you, so here goes. One, will Dante Moore be UCLA's starting quarterback in the 2023 season beginning from the first game on? Yes.
Yes.
Two, when UCLA and us... Suck. Dollar sign UC, I think? Or is it just an S?
That's just an S.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think you just got him transposed there a little bit. When UCLA, I guess we'll just read it the way it's written, suck, get to the big B1G, the Big Ten. We all know that one. In 2024, will the football officiating be any better than Pac-12 officiating has been? Yes. But people will still complain at the exact same volume.
Yeah, it'll still suck, but no way it'd be worse.
Three, does penix size matter?
I mean, size is one of those things. It matters.
Okay. You think so?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, if you're Doug Flutie or you're...
What if you're rocking a hockey puck? Oh, we're talking about Penix the player, not penis the...
Yes.
Oh, got it.
Yeah. That's why I said, you know, Doug Flutie.
I thought that was your name for your... Okay. Four, will Dave attend a live UCLA football or basketball home game before the end of this decade? Yes.
Really?
Unfortunately, I have to go to a basketball game in February.
Wait, why?
Just scheduling issues.
Okay.
Five, will UCLA basketball make the Final Four this season?
This is a tough one for you. I'm going to say no. I think the Pac-12 is just not as good as it was last year. Like last year, I would have said...
Hard yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Six, is UCLA and suck moving to the Big Ten ultimately a good thing for both schools? No.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Wow.
Well, because it's not, I'm saying for both. Like, I don't think it's going to be good for UCLA.
I don't think it's going to be good for either school.
I think it'll be good for USC.
No. Right. Disagree. Short term, maybe.
Money.
Short term, for sure, but long term, no. Bad for both.
What is it bad? Is it good for the show? Or bad for the show?
It's horrible for the show.
We have no idea what we're going
to
do.
I don't know. Thanks for your time. And what I know will be thoughtful and meaningful answers to these burning questions. Love you both. Hugh Janus and Hey, Would You Blow Me?
Okay. Thanks, Hugh and Hey. This is Washington NIL Money from Rob, who's up in Seattle. Hey, boys. I'm interrupting preparing my 7-month-old's dinner to respond to something that Dave said in last week's podcast. Clearly, I have my priorities straight here. Last week, someone asked if...
What are you preparing for your 7-month-old? Is the real question there. So they're just starting with like basic solid foods.
Yeah.
So you're either opening a can or you are mashing things.
Well.
Rob, were you chewing food and then like spitting it into a cup? Like what was going
like
on
baby
here?
Bird thing?
Yeah. Baby bird him.
Nice. Maybe that's what he was doing. He was baby birding food. Last week, someone asked if the new NIL deals meant that the Pac-12 teams could now compete with SEC-style recruiting money back east. Dave said the following response. At least he's telling us what you said because we would remember. From an NIL perspective, he even quoted you. I wonder if he like transcribed this perfectly. From an NIL perspective, even with the West getting a little bit better with it, most of the schools are not competing at the level of some of these SEC powers. They're not paying at that level or promising to pay at that level. My mind immediately flashed to something most Washington fans listening have probably already heard of, but which may not have trickled out into the greater Pac-12 universe. Washington quarterback's verbal commit is the most recent recruiting cycle. Four-star Lincoln Kineholtz out of Pierre, South Dakota, flipped late in the game to Ohio State after their QB commit flipped to another school. This loss was genuinely a bummer, but Kleinholtz said something in his post-flip interview that really made Husky fans' ears perk up. He said the following: I think Washington had better NIL than Ohio State. I think I can go to Washington and get money, or I can go to Ohio State and be developed and then potentially reach my goal of going to the NFL. Well, it would be reasonable to hear this quote and think, ouch, shots fired at Washington. I think most Husky fans heard this and thought something along the lines of, holy shit, we have more NIL money to offer than Ohio State? Awesome. While Ohio State is not in the SEC, I think it's fair to throw them into the same boat in terms of their ability to recruit top talent at a national level. Also, I think it's fair to point out that it makes sense Washington would offer more money to their top quarterback target than the Ohio State University would to their second or third choice. But still, Washington offered more money to a blue chip recruit than Ohio State. Apparently, our Amazon/Microsoft cash is being put to good use. And this is coming from a public servant who wouldn't know anything about that kind of money. Anyway, just thought I'd share this interesting little tidbit. NIL may have helped to level the playing field somewhat in terms of recruiting against the big boys back east, even if it means they were having to overpay for these recruits' services. Love the pod. Thanks for all you guys do. Go Dogs, Rob in Seattle.
A lot of thoughts.
That was a lot.
Yeah, a lot of thoughts. One, you got to take a grain of salt with any recruit. Same thing we said the other day. He's just going a little bit more aggressive with it. But nobody's ever going to say, I went there because there was more money.
Look good when you say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so he's saying, oh, I'm going there for development. Yada, yada, yada. Actually, they were going to pay me more because he's like really sensitive about it. Maybe it may be true. From what I understand about Ohio State's NIL, they're not very good at it. They've not been one that's been talked about a lot as like one with like a huge program like Tennessee. Like Tennessee's, they got the NIL going. But Ohio State's, you know, they're still probably going to have a pretty robust NIL network at the end of the day. And I think with these nascent, these burgeoning NIL programs that are happening at all these West Coast schools, again, Washington didn't really have a great cheating apparatus. Look, everyone cheats. All the West Coast schools cheated too, but just at a very, 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 very smaller level than the ones out east. So there isn't
Arizona State, to be fair, cheated pretty egregiously.
I mean, they cheated. They cheated in a way that was like, this is just kind of really this is just kind of harmful for people's health. It's not actually paying the money, but like all those things, they don't have the apparatus for literally giving money to recruits. Whereas for the SEC, as we've been saying, all this did was make it easier to do the thing that was already being done.
Yeah.
Whereas these schools all have to like get past the idea. Wait, is this cheating anymore, or is it not? And if it isn't, okay, but we don't even have the donor base to do this yet. So you'll see this occasionally as they're building these programs, especially with like a big time quarterback commitment or a big time quarterback recruit or whatever it is, where they'll suddenly get a lot of interest from their donors to like, okay, we can make a big offer for this guy or whatever and see if they can build something around that. But it doesn't necessarily mean the entire program is fully filled out and that you're going to be able to spend that insane amount of money on like a defensive tackle the way Tennessee is.
Right.
And so it's, you know, it's in these fits and starts, you're going to start to see them growing. But again, I think you take what anybody is saying publicly at this point with a grain of salt. Two, Ohio State is not really the hugest NIL competition right now. It truly is the SEC.
Yeah.
And three, yeah, Washington's going to build an NIL program because there is real fan interest in that program. USC is too. UCLA is in the process of doing it. But what you'll note about all those, and Oregon thrown in, those are also traditionally the powers in the Pac-12. These are the schools that have that interest already. What I think you're going to see shake out, end of the day, is that the schools that were traditional powers and traditional recruiting powers are going to continue to be traditional recruiting powers.
And those traditional recruiting powers tend to be, they're probably moving a little slower on NIL because they didn't need it. Like Ohio State didn't need to pay a lot of money because they were already recruiting at a high level. I think when Alabama, Nick Saban went after Texas A&M because they got a better class, it's like, well, Nick Saban didn't have to do that before. And then he's yelling at his boosters like, hey, we better start doing this now because we got to get back on top. So that could be part of it too. Real quick, before you read the next one, Equity Bruin wrote in, hey guys, I just got a quick question. Can someone tell me how many Pac-12 teams are in Lunardi's most recent bracket? And I don't know if he maybe doesn't listen to the show. We don't talk about the non-revenue Olympic sports on this one. We only talk about football. So I'm not sure which one that is.
So Equity Bruin is confused. Once again, the Pac-12 has two teams that are surely in, and then it has several teams.
Is this water polo?
Several
what are we
teams,
talking about?
Just several teams in what I like to refer to as the bubble crap.
The bubble crap. Okay.
And now there are two more teams in the right side of the bubble crap in Jonah Lunardi's latest bracket, but they are still, in fact, in the bubble crap.
Okay.
So there's two teams that are truly in, and they're both, you know, going to be top eight overall seeds.
Okay.
And then there's a bunch of bubble crap that may or may not make the NCAA tournament.
Ah. So all right. That was your Olympic sports moment.
A tweet I wrote in December remains correct. The Pac-12 is going to have two tournament seeds.
Okay.
And then a whole bunch of shit.
Seems exciting. That's why we don't talk about the Olympic sports here.
Thank you.
The non-revenue Olympic sports.
Thank you for your time.
You're up next, I think.
Am I?
Mm-hmm.
Who knew? this is from Andrew.
Yeah.
Hello. I sent an email about the belt a few weeks ago. To clarify, the Huskies took the belt from the Ducks, who took it from BYU in week three and had it for an impressive 3 weeks. Speaking at
8 weeks.
8 weeks, sorry. Speaking of the Ducks, Dan Lanning has only been in Eugene 1 year and did the most Oregon thing anyone could do. He went and got a tattoo of a neck tattoo. Also, I don't believe it was pointed out that the boomerang on his wife's neck commemorates them meeting at an Outback steakhouse. The tattoo was an odd choice, but a sweet gesture, and fuck cancer. I sent an email the same day the LA schools announced they were leaving, and it was never read, and because it's the offseason, I'm going to resend it. Here it is. If the Pac-12 head coaches never got into coaching, what career path would they have chosen? Oh, we sent this to Shane. Hang on.
We did?
Yes.
Did he ever respond?
We sent it to him on Twitter. I think I can find it. Hang on.
Okay. So he said, maybe send a bad signal to Shane for this one. Incidentally, has anyone done a wellness check on Hithloday? Haven't heard much from him recently. Peace, love, and harmony from Andrew. So we sent Shane this request.
We did. I got to find it.
And he hasn't responded?
No, he did. I just have to find it.
Oh. So he didn't respond is what you're saying.
Hang on. All right. Here is Shane's response.
Okay.
Gym teacher, 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 MLM scheme guru, and self-published author that got $800 to come talk at your mid-level manager offsite. Perfect.
That was great.
Perfect answer.
Thank you, Shane. Way to find that. That was good. Mike at Oakland has off-season questions. Hey, Brian and Rave. I don't think we've had that one before. Here are some off-season questions to help spark some witty banter and insights. One, did Caleb Williams get more than $1 million in NIL to come to $C? I'm sure he did. I'm sure he had, like, but it wasn't like a, you don't want to give USC credit here. This is Caleb Williams getting money from big companies. Like, he has Beats. He has a bunch of things like that. It wasn't like USC was organized enough to like put a package together for him. He could get it just because he's Caleb Williams. Because they're just not that organized with that stuff. They're trying to, but they're not.
And they certainly weren't a year ago.
No way. There was not yet. All that stuff, you think, like, you're giving them way too much credit that they could put together a bunch of money to bring someone.
Yeah.
Two, should the NCAA and or college football establish a salary cap for college football to set a more even playing field?
It requires them first allowing these guys to get paid for real via a salary. But right. Yes, those things should happen because right now it is insane what is happening. And the main problem is the security for the players is not present and they are getting screwed. There's a lot of it's very Wild West unregulated where guys are being told one thing. Then they arrive on campus and it's an entirely different deal. And the problem is because the schools can't have an official capacity here, and I'm not saying it all needs to be routed through the schools and they decide who gets doled out what, but because there's no official capacity and no regulatory body besides, I guess, the IRS at the end of the day, you could have individuals operating on behalf of the university saying, yeah, I'm going to give you, you know, $2 million. And they show up on campus and I said, no, I said $2. And it's just, you know, some of the kids get screwed and some of them, you know, they can exercise their leverage to avoid this happening. Jaden Rashada being one.
Yeah.
But some of them don't have that leverage. Some of them are getting offered, oh, I can get $50,000 if I go here. That'll set me up. You know, I can kick back $20,000 to my parents or whatever it is. And then they show up on campus and it's like, no, you're getting your stipend and that's it. And we don't have any other money to give you. Sorry, you're shit out of luck. And that's the unfortunate part. If you make it all salaries, if you make it all agreed upon contracts, all this kind of stuff that can make it a little bit more above board. Because right now, still, a lot of these schools, every school that's participating in NIL is still operating in a gray area because the NCAA has not clearly defined what they're ever even potentially going to punish. So it's all a gray area. So everything is a little bit under the table still. And there's still a little bit of like, oh, we can't say this explicitly because, you know, that might be considered an inducement or whatever. And the end result is things don't get in writing. There isn't a true contract and guys are getting screwed.
Yeah.
So, yes, there needs to be a little bit more regulation, not in a way that they're like, encumbering, guys from getting paid their fair market value, but, there should probably be two separate things in the same way there are in professional sports. There should be the salary you get for playing the sport, and then there are endorsements on top of that.
Yeah.
And those endorsements are negotiated contracts above board, and those can happen at any time. And if they're inducements, they're inducements. Who gives a shit? What are we pretending that these aren't inducements? Like, of course they are. Of course, when we talk about like
any salary.
NIL is going to be an important factor for this recruit. What are we talking about? Yeah. The opportunities after they get in school?
Yeah,
yeah, sure. I guess that is what we're talking about. But we should all just be a little bit more transparent, a little bit more above board about this stuff, and then it'll be fairer on the players.
I mean, how ridiculous is it we have a sport that you can get paid, but the organization that you're going to play for can't pay you. So it's some fringe organization that can promise things and you don't really have control over. And yeah, it's pretty nutty.
Yeah.
Should the transfer portal be closed through the entire season until after the end of the college football playoff to incite players to participate in bowls playoffs? That wouldn't help. I mean, just because you close the portal doesn't mean guys are going to, you know.
Well, it would help this year. I mean, like a guy like Keaton Slovis might have stayed with Pitt if he didn't have to enter the portal in early December.
Oh, because they closed the window, right?
Yeah, so they open the window right after the regular season is over in December, and then it stretches until mid-January.
But you could still wait to enter like after the stuff happens, right?
But if you're trying to do official visits, if you're trying to do all that stuff in that time period and also get enrolled by the first semester, by January semester.
Oh, yeah. So you kind of need it to be open so they can have an opportunity to play in the next semester.
You do, but it's also like from a timing perspective, it's a little bit of a struggle, but it's pro player, so I'm okay with it.
I'm pro player, yeah.
So it's fine.
And would giving players a stipend or bonus for bowl games get more players to participate? I think
probably, and worth experimenting.
They should do NIL deals. Like the bowls can pay the players. Like they can be like,
they
hey.
I remember reading some bowl was like unclear on whether they could. And that's, again, a thing that should be worked out where like, no, every single player, instead of getting a gift suite, you're going to get $15,000 to participate in this game or $20,000 or whatever the hell it is. And then it's a real incentive to go and just participate. You got to put in 3 weeks of practice and then, you know, put your body on the line. And it's still going to be a decision for some of these guys who are obvious NFL prospects, but it sweetens the pot a little bit.
Sure.
And that should happen.
And then will $C and FUCLA Athletics get to keep their frequent flyer miles during the season should they fly commercial? I think they're going charter.
Yeah, that would be awesome if they just all made the executive decision. No, I'm taking American Airlines for all these. I want those points.
Yeah, give me those points. All right. Thanks to Go Cougs Mike in Oakland. Hey, real quick before you jump into the next one, is there some West Texas Mike? Is there a tweet you can point me to at Equity Brewing that'll catch me up on this intra-Bruin rivalry you have with David Woods? Is there a rivalry? Because he agreed with what you had said on the political stuff, but said he wouldn't ever compliment you.
It's a bunch of bullshit because Equity Brewing and everyone over there at No Truck Stops, they watch Pac-12 basketball for some reason. In the same way that like you and I and most sane people watch every single Pac-12 football game that's on.
Yes.
They do that also for basketball. But the problem is,
holy crap,
that doesn't pay off in any way. And the reason it doesn't pay off in any way is because most of the league is absolute dog shit. And watching like Washington State play non-conference games in November is not going to help you understand Washington State getting its ass kicked or kicking the ass of Arizona in January. Hmm. Just doesn't. I don't need to know who Brendan Carlson is. Brandon Carlson.
Don't know who he is.
I don't know. Brandy Carlisle, great singer.
I've been to more Pac-12 basketball games this year than you have, for sure.
Correct. All you need to do is have a general sense of what the other league teams are doing. Watch your own team, the one you have to, and then watch the games they play against those teams and say, oh, yeah, that team sucks.
So if I'm getting this right, he's okay with me not talking about basketball because he knows I don't really care, but he knows that you are a basketball person
and won't talk about basketball. I think it's two things. One, I talk shit about this on Twitter, and I talk shit about everyone else in the league. Then they call me out for not watching the games, of which I say, yeah, I don't. And yet still my analysis is significantly more correct most of the time than Mr. Equity Bruins. And I think it's frustrating. But I think it's because the value gained from watching also comes with the noise of watching.
Gotcha.
Because you watch enough Utah basketball, you'll convince yourself, oh, these scrubs I'm watching, they're actually good. They're not good.
No
they're not. They're not. They are not. Their coach is pretty good. They play as a team, but they themselves individually are not very good.
Mm.
So anyway, this has been too much basketball talk, and also we got to rapid fire these in like 3 minutes because I got to go.
Okay, you're next.
All right, this is from Amy. Hello, Dave and Ryan. Redshirt 101. I appreciated your recap show going over your picks versus actual. As a math teacher, it's always good to look at the theoretical versus experimental probabilities. I heard a thing that I've never heard before, a redshirt junior. I think this is when the Utah was playing Oregon State, and they mentioned one of their players was a redshirt junior. Now, I've heard of a redshirt freshman, but I thought it was only for freshmen, which leads me to my question, what defines a redshirt player? Can a player be a redshirt for multiple years? Does being a redshirt affect the number of scholarships the school can give out each season? What's the difference between a redshirt freshman and a true freshman? Go Utes. All right, Amy, very simple. Guys are called a redshirt junior, redshirt sophomore, redshirt senior, redshirt freshman for every single year after they took their redshirt year.
Yeah.
So a guy can take his redshirt year at any time. He can take it as a freshman, true freshman. That's the most common one. He can take it for an injury. He can take it if he doesn't figure he's going to play his sophomore year after playing some spot minutes his first year, whatever it is. Every year after that, he's called a redshirt sophomore, junior, senior to delineate that he's different from a true sophomore, true junior, true senior. And the best way to read it is whatever year a sophomore is supposed to be, a redshirt sophomore is a third-year sophomore.
Yeah,
redshirt is filling the gap for third year. A fourth year junior is a redshirt junior. A fifth year senior is a redshirt senior. It's just to show that he's taken another year of eligibility already. You can only redshirt once unless you get a medical hardship waiver, which is not necessarily a redshirt. And then you might get 6 years. But they can redshirt at any time, but you only get one.
And unfortunately, the COVID year gave a free year to everybody, so that makes the classification
makes it all much
confusing.
More complicated. We're all figuring out how to write that. I think we've taken to using a plus sign for a guy who still has another year after his year, but some guys have done like a super junior or a super senior or whatever it is. But there's different ways of writing it. And
some schools don't even like look at you.
Stanford screws everyone because in their notes every time, if in their game notes, they only write their class year. They don't actually tell you their athletic eligibility.
Yes.
They do this to be frustrating in Stanford. but yeah, that very simply, that's what the redshirt situation is.
We have a text message. Gentlemen, can you give me any reason to think that the Pac-12 will not be an absolute bloodbath next season? There are at least five teams that probably have the talent to compete for a slot in the playoff, but with many of the top teams and likely at least three, maybe four tier two teams. How the hell is Utah, USC, Oregon, Washington, or Oregon State going to navigate this conference with a 0-1 losses? Who got the best shot at based on all the factors? Hope I'm wrong, but it seems a tall order with the talent level. It should be a great swan song for the conference regardless.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think this is going to be one of the better years of the Pac-12 in recent memory. It's going to be a lot of really good teams. I think it's going to be a ton of fun to watch.
And unfortunately, the floor, there might be a couple of god-awful teams, but the teams that were, there was a lot more god-awful teams last year, so there was less crossover of the bottom teams beating the top teams. There could be more of those teams that happening, which gives it a little bit more parity, and then, like he said, makes it harder for someone to go undefeated or just one loss.
Right. All right, this is from Sean, last one. Hi, guys. Sean from Ohio. Gents, with the Pac-12 returning to the Pac-10 shortly, I've been thinking about the future of the conference. I think the conference does one of three things moving forward, which are, one, does not expand. Allows college football to morph into whatever it decides to be and tries to fit in at a later date. Even if Oregon and Washington leave, the conference could survive, obviously at a lower level with eight, and maybe in the future consider option two below, which is, two, tries again to expand. San Diego State seems like a fit because of location. If so, does the conference need to add Fresno too, or is that redundant with the SoCal thing? Why do people see Boise State as a candidate? I don't think they bring a thing to the table and have regressed into a marginal football program. Is it time to think outside the box? UNLV, Air Force, SMU? Three, this might seem drastic, but if Oregon and Washington leave and the Arizona Mountain Schools follow by moving into the Big 12, does that that does not leave the conference with much. Would Stanford and Cal consider a move to the Ivy League? Is disbanding the conference a sign of failure or a sign of smart people figuring out how they got their butts beat in this expansion saga and moving on without further casualties and missed payouts they need to pay back? Could not think of anything else to write about while sitting here in a work conference call.
We're helping production in this country.
That's true.
Work production. I kind of think there's going to be an expansion with San Diego State. Maybe that's it. Maybe another one. But that's sort of where I'm leaning towards now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably worthwhile. I think they probably should. I don't know. I mean, I think the next 10 years is a really, really tough thing to figure out. Is there going to be further consolidation? Or are these things going to explode? You know, is it going to quickly become apparent to UCLA and USC that the Big Ten is not a fit? Is it going to become quickly apparent to Texas and Oklahoma that the SEC is not a fit and that they're not going to have their run of dominance? And whatever they might like the money, the reality is those programs like to win. And, you know, looking at UCLA and USC, I still think there's going to be a big competitive hit both of those programs take going to the Big Ten. How's that going to sit, especially at USC, when, you know, their best years are like 10-2 because they're playing shitload of road games across the country every year?
Yeah, could be tough.
We'll see.
We will see. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up. I know David has to go. We went a very long time, hour and 44 minutes in the off season, and with nothing really to talk about, but we still did. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions. We'll try to do these every week. We'll try to keep a consistent time. We'll figure that out. But we say that, and we probably won't do it. But just, you know, the intent is there, or the desire is there. Maybe not the intent. For David Woods, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.